Hello, and thank you for listening to The Doctor Is In. On this show, we discuss topics related to all things public health. Public health topics cover everything from the environment to mental health, physical health, and today we're going to talk about young adults and vaping. The dangers of vaping and e-cigarette use have been in the news for the past several months. At the end of the year, the CDC reported that there have been more than 2,500 lung injury cases related to e-cigarette use and 55 deaths associated with the use of e-cigarettes or vaping. What exactly is vaping? What are we talking about? Vaping is inhaling an aerosolized liquid from a device, sometimes called a vape pen or an e-cigarette. The device is filled with liquid that often tastes like candy, cakes, fruits, mint, and is heated. Once the liquid is heated and aerosolized into millions of tiny droplets, it's inhaled. The vape liquid is a mixture of highly addictive nicotine, potentially harmful chemicals, and other additives that can damage the developing brain and body, especially of a young person. Some e-cigarettes, like the brand Juul, resemble flash drives and can be charged into a laptop's USB port. Many teens and young adults use Juul because of the size and because it produces less smoke than other e-cigarettes, making it barely noticeable when vaping at home or school. The CDC says that more than 1 in 4 high school students vape, and more than 25% of high school students have used an e-cigarette in the past month. In Howard County, high school students are 77% more likely to use e-cigarettes than traditional smoking cigarettes. What's going on? Our first guest today is Spencer Freeman, a former smoker and e-cigarette user who has agreed to talk to us about his experiences vaping. Thank you for speaking with us, Spencer. And I have to let you know that Spencer is one of our environmental health specialists at the health department. Can you start by telling us about how you first got started smoking traditional tobacco products as a young person?
Just being in high school, I had a couple of older friends who were able to purchase cigarettes, and I had one friend in particular who offered them to me, and occasionally, I wouldn't partake in it, but eventually I gave in and had a couple of cigarettes with him.
That's not unusual that we hear from young people who start smoking in high school or even in middle school and have received the cigarette from someone who's older than them. At the time when you started smoking, were you aware of the dangers of cigarette smoking?
I was aware of the dangers. I knew that one cigarette wouldn't kill me, but I did know that they were not good for you. I knew that, having them as a habit would have a lot of negative health effects. When I first started, I wasn't very, keen on the addictive side of it.
How long do you think it took before you realized that you were hooked?
That's kind of a tough question to answer because you always told yourself first several times of using it that you can quit any time. And I want to say, it came up pretty quick, probably within a month. Month or two. It's really hard to say. It's hard to pinpoint because you're always telling yourself, you can quit, no big deal. But then when you actually try to, that's when you figure out, okay, this is a little harder than I thought.
So when did you decide that you wanted to quit?
Probably, I smoked probably for 10 years, so probably around the 8-year mark. Being in high school and college, it, was part of the social atmosphere, you could say, a little bit. And then afterwards, it was kind of just a juvenile habit that I needed to quit.
So what steps did you try to take at that time?
I tried going cold turkey right off the bat, but there are a lot of, mental hurdles you have to go through with that. Getting, frustrated pretty easily. In order to get out of it, I actually used some websites because they kind of informed me of what was going to happen during the process of quitting. I also, along with smoking, was dipping at the time, so I actually used a website called Killed the Can, and it kind of brought you through the journey of quitting and what was going to happen at certain stages, so websites like that. really helped me out.
Can you share with the audience dipping a little bit more about what that is?
Dipping is just the term for chew tobacco. The cans that you can buy at your convenience stores, it's just raw tobacco that you would put in between your gum and your cheek, and you can leave it there for a while. At the time in high school, it was a little easier to get away with than smoking cigarettes, so I partaked in that. And plus, it would be one of those things where I'd switch back and forth. If I was smoking enough where my lungs were starting to hurt, well, then I'd switch to dipping, and then once my gum started to hurt, it'd switch back. Pretty ugly cycle.
As I mentioned in the introduction, cigarettes contain a highly addictive chemical called nicotine that acts on the brain and other parts of the body that make it very difficult to quit. And the body goes through withdrawal, which is probably some of the things that you experience. And that is not just mental, but it's also physical. And so it is really, really hard to quit.
Yes, it is.
So at what point did you turn to vaping or even hear about vaping as an alternative to smoking cigarettes?
Probably around the 7-8 year mark, about the time that I was trying to quit. Going cold turkey was tough, so I started looking for substitutes, something that was healthier, I guess, in a sense. So having seen those blue e-cigarette commercials on TV, I kind of got in my head that, you know, I can give this a try. This would be something that would be healthier to, I guess, have a habit with than smoking regular cigarettes or dipping. So that's kind of how I got involved with it, kind of like a step down in my mind.
Yeah, and we'll get to talk about this a little bit later, about the marketing of e-cigarettes and the proposed health alternatives to smoking. So you tried e-cigarettes or blue, and did it help you?
At first, I thought it did. At first, you were able to, I guess, control how much you were smoking. That kind of quickly diminished, though. I knew I wasn't inhaling as many toxic chemicals as I would with a cigarette. However, I did notice that I was using this pen a lot more than I would smoke or dip. Smoking would be outside, you know, but this vape pen, I could use it anywhere. So at first it seemed like it helped me, but ultimately, no, it didn't seem like it helped me because I couldn't control myself from using it.
Tell us a little bit about, you mentioned to me earlier before the show that you're no longer smoking or vaping. So it was sort of, how did you transition from someone using vape to now being a non-smoker?
Okay. So when I first started vaping, I thought it was a good idea at first, but I quickly noticed that I couldn't control myself from using it inside. So my thought was that, you know, I'm using this thing more often than I would smoke a regular cigarette. And it's not helping me at all. I can actually still feel the negative effects just from going up the stairs and going down the stairs. So as backwards as it sounded, I actually switched back to regular cigarettes because I wanted the, I guess, force of me having to go outside and using it then. You know, you need willpower to quit. It really is just that simple. If you don't have it, then you're going to have a hard time quitting. But backing down off of the nicotine from the vape pen back to cigarettes, having only smoking it outside, I think I was able to come off of it a little easier, but it definitely took 3 months for sure.
Sounds like you have a lot of willpower, and I want to congratulate you for stopping smoking. And the experiences that you've shared with us are familiar to many other smokers. And in our next segment, we're going to have an expert talk about quitting and smoking and the contents of e-cigarettes, as well as other traditional products that make it so hard to quit. So we'll be right back in a moment.
My suit can still make an impression.
And my lamp can bring others a bright future.
Because when I donate my stuff to Goodwill, it helps fund job placement and training for people right in my community.
Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. And thank you for joining in on the conversation we're having about vaping. Joining us now is an expert on smoking, Dr. Panagis Galeacetos, assistant professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, where he currently co-directs the Medicine for the Greater Good and is the community engagement co-director for the Baltimore Breathe Center. He is also serves as an expert national spokesman for the American Lung Association. Dr. G, as we'll call him, completed his medical degree from the University of Maryland School of Medicine and completed a pulmonary and critical care fellowship at Hopkins and the National Institutes of Health. Finally, he completed two master's degrees, one in health sciences from Duke University and one in tobacco treatment at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. He likes school. We're so glad to have you here today. I have to admit that we met about a month or two ago when we were both speaking about vaping at different conferences and sort of naturally connected, and I'm so glad you're able to join us here. We just spoke with Spencer, and he talked about his experience with smoking traditional cigarettes and starting in high school and smoking for about 8 years or 10 years and wanting to quit. And listened to some ads about e-cigarettes and began vaping and his challenges with vaping. Tell us a little bit about vaping and cigarette smoking and your work.
So first of all, thank you for letting me be here. The one thing that I'll add to that amazing biography that you read, which was mine, sorry, is that I'm also the director of the Tobacco Treatment Clinic at Johns Hopkins. And so I see patients such as Spencer and others who are just trying to come off of nicotine-related products. So when patients come to me and they want to talk anything about from vaping to traditional combustible cigarettes, the first thing I always try to emphasize, and whether it's in a clinical setting or a community setting, is that our lungs are really designed for one thing, air. The fragility of the lungs once you get down to the alveoli with that fragile pneumocyte lining, anything that you bring in there that isn't air is always going to serve a potential for causing lung injury in some capacity. So when I talk to patients about combustible cigarettes to vaping, I make it clear the quantity of toxins isn't what concerns me, it's the quality of the toxins. So even if you have one toxin, if that's really substantial enough to cause harm to the lungs, you're going to feel it. And the biggest concern I think sometimes we focus with smoking, especially with combustible cigarettes, is rooted in that 1964 U.S. Surgeon General's report by U.S. Surgeon General Luther Terry, lung cancer. And cancer always gets people concerned. But I think what we fail to recognize is that smoking causes a lot of other more immediate issues. Combustible cigarettes cause a lot of interstitial lung disease. And now vaping, we've recognized, also causes a lot more diseases that are more prevalent to the community, such as asthma. So if you haven't had asthma before, maybe now you're developing it. If you had asthma in the past and you've started vaping, your asthma's gotten more severe. In our clinic, we've seen about 30-some patients aged between 16 and 24. All of them have some level of lung disease because of vaping. One of the students, for instance, who's come to see me, she is in her young 20s. Her FEV1 is about 70%, right? She has the equivalent lung capacity of someone in their 70s. And that bothers me, right? Because all of these patients, when they came to see me, the first thing they said to me was, safe. I thought this e-cigarette was safe. It was promoted as safe. My peers were doing it. And that breaks my heart, right? I don't think we need to tell a person about combustible cigarettes and the harm to that. But patients who use e-cigarettes with this notion of safety, part of me feels like, you know, these are our community members. They're being misguided and they're getting a lot of incomplete information about this product.
I attended a task force meeting recently in Maryland, and there is a student representative, high school student, and a question was asked, why do kids get into vaping now? And he said, well, we certainly wouldn't smoke cigarettes because we know how bad they are. But no one told us that vaping was bad for us. So it seemed like a cool thing to do that wasn't so harmful to us. And plus, they really loved sort of the design of the electronic devices and the fact that it could be hidden. So it's sort of a cool thing for a young person to do. And he didn't know that it contained nicotine, which is a highly addictive substance. Tell us a little bit about nicotine and how the devices work and the delivery of the nicotine, which can make it so hard to quit once you realize maybe I don't want to do this anymore.
Of course. So nicotine, by far one of the most addictive, if not the most addictive molecule known to man. It's chemical structure resembles one of the most abundant neurotransmitters we have in our brain, acetylcholine. Knowing that, once nicotine gets into our brain, it's going to go hijack those acetylcholine receptors and convert them in through its own nicotine receptors. And then it's, well, where are those acetylcholine receptors? A lot of them are placed in the prefrontal cortex and the mesolimbic area of the brains. These are parts of the brain that really help an individual condition themselves to wanting to be rewarded by things that gratify the brain. Food, sleep, for instance, right? These are activities that we know promote survival, therefore to the brain promote gratification. So nicotine hijacks those areas. We're almost convincing your brain you need nicotine to gratify it, and it's on par with every other neurotransmitter and chemical that induces the feeling of survival and so forth. But nicotine from combustible cigarettes and electronic cigarettes is a lot more devious. To create an addiction, you need to blast the brain with a lot of nicotine. You need to blast it with a chemically enhanced nicotine. And finally, high concentrations of that molecule. E-cigarettes and combustible cigarettes do that, right? If I put a patch on a young student, a nicotine patch, removed it after about a month, it's very unlikely they would be addicted. If I blast them with a chemically enhanced nicotine product, and by chemical enhancement, all those chemicals in combustible cigarettes, as well as the chemicals in the electronic cigarettes, what they're aiming to do is to demethylate the nicotine, knock off that methyl group. Once you do that, it can cross the blood-brain barrier exponentially faster, and it can take over those acetylcholine receptors much quicker. The products delivering nicotine are designed to do one thing and one thing only, create that addiction. They're designed very well to do that.
And we know that the developing brain, which you young people out there is developing up to age 26, is highly susceptible to these type of products. And the cigarette companies or tobacco companies or Juul companies recognize that susceptibility and are marketing to younger people. And we can see that in the use of flavored products. Nicotine in itself may not taste so good, so they flavor it with different things like Skittle, popcorn, mint, which is very popular, and menthol products. Anything about that you want to say?
Yeah, a couple things that I want to add, right? Because you brought up the coolness factor a couple times, and you're spot on. I think one of the biggest successes we've had in public health was that we passed a lot of laws to regulate tobacco, combustible cigarettes. But really making that product seem unattractive to youth was a victory. I think that's why youth, for the most part, not so much our policies, but the unattractiveness of combustible cigarettes has led them to really decline in their usage. Electronic cigarettes try to win them over with the cool factor. If you go on social media, they're promoting an identity, they're promoting a culture, they're promoting likes, right? There's a variety of things that are feeding into the youth to do this. With regards to all the products, the other chemicals to enhance, I mean, it's stealing that playbook right out of the traditional cigarettes, right? Especially menthol. I think one of the things that when I talk to other providers, other healthcare professionals, and I ask them, why do you think menthol is added? They're like, oh, well, it suppresses the cough reflex. So if your first time using that product, you find enjoyment as opposed to finding, you know, I'm feeling like I'm coughing my lung out, you're more likely to go back to it. And that is true. There's truth to that. But there's a lot more diabolical conversations around it. So the tobacco industry, best chemists have ever worked in this world have worked for the tobacco companies, right? Best marketers have worked with tobacco. They know how to make their products chemically enhanced and how to market it to kind of persuade people to accept that product. Menthol specifically, that chemical actually has an interaction with the nicotine receptors. So there's a demographic of individuals who have a mutation called THR292. It's a gene, THR292. If you have this gene, that mutation results in defective nicotine receptors. So if I introduce nicotine through a cigarette, nicotine goes to those defective receptors, nothing happens. No chemical stimulation, no addiction. If I add menthol, menthol goes and stabilizes those defective nicotine receptors, and suddenly nicotine could go in and create an addiction. So once menthol is recognized for that property, it's been added to almost every nicotine-related product for tobacco. Even if it's not advertised very greatly, it's usually sprinkled in there. The demographic, by the way, who has that abundance of the THR292 gene, African Americans. That's why they were targeted pretty extensively in the 1970s and 1980s in order to promote addiction a lot more feasibly.
Thank you, Dr. G, for sharing this important information. We're going to take a pause, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Natalie Hall and Kirsten Miner, who are health educators at the Howard County Health Department and who champion the Teen Tobacco Awareness Program.
1 in 6 seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Drop off a hot meal and say a quick hello. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
Hello, we're back. Thank you for taking part of your day to listen to The Doctor Is In. We're talking about teens and the dangers of vaping. Joining us today are Natalie Hall and Kirsten Miner, who work for the Howard County Health Department as health educators, specifically in the Tobacco Awareness Program. Tell us a little more about this program.
All right. Thank you for having me today. So as Dr. Rossman mentioned, I currently serve as a tobacco enforcement coordinator for the Howard County Health Department. One of our initiatives that we have is the Tobacco Awareness Program for Teens, which is an alternative to suspension for Howard County middle school and high school students who have been caught with traditionally tobacco products, electronic smoking devices, even in some cases marijuana. And instead of students being suspended, it's more a restorative education program, an opportunity for students to come to the Howard County Health Department and learn more about the impacts that electronic smoking devices and tobacco can have on their health as well as their development, and an opportunity for them to be connected to resources to help them with making informed decisions as well as sensation resources.
We talked a little bit earlier about why teens may engage in vaping and perhaps them not really knowing the dangers. Statistics tell us that 1 in 4 teens have vaped and are vaping. Is that happening in Howard County? What do you hear from the teens that you work with?
What we're hearing from Howard County teens, and I think just across the board, even when we think about the conversation that you just had earlier with our guest Spencer, is that most high school students who start smoking, it's kind of like they were approached by a peer or an adult, someone that they know, and it's just kind of the hip thing. It's the cool thing. So they're not picking up electronic smoking devices with the, you know, mindset that this is going to be something that could lead to addiction and, you know, be a hard thing to quit. They're just picking it up with kind of the mentality is that I can stop at any time that I want. And it's just something that I do for fun. One of the things that we see with the Tobacco Awareness Program for teens is that essentially, you know, it's just kind of a way to kind of pass time. Some of our students have identified that it's a way to kind of cope with things going on at home. And in that case, we're just like, well, what are healthier ways we can cope with things? One of the statistics that we do have in a class is that 9 out of 10 of individuals who become lifelong smokers or develop an addiction to nicotine started prior to the age of 18. So in regards to recent policies with Tobacco 21, for an example, which has increased the tobacco sales age from 18 to 21, is informed from the actual fact that the brain is still developing and the fact that teenagers are significantly more at risk of developing addiction. And that's what we're seeing. Natalie, if you want to jump in.
No, I completely agree. Your question in regards to what are we seeing here in Howard County? Why are they using this product? Like Kirsten said, stress is a huge one. Stress of school, stress of parents. We've heard it all. I've had students break down in tears because the stress level is so high. These are middle school and high school students that we're working with. So stress is definitely a big one. And then also, as Kirsten said, the social factor. So you have either a group of people and they're doing it, so you join in, or even you're just bored and maybe your parents are doing it. It's in your house. It's something that's readily available and with the idea that it is healthier than a traditional cigarette. So they pick up the habit that way as well.
The teens that you work with, do their parents know that they're vaping? You mentioned that some parents may be vaping. We know these products can be hidden readily. They may not have a particular odor to them or smell. What do parents know about this?
I believe what we see is a lot of our students who come to us, their parents are aware that they're smoking. A lot of cases, again, what Natalie is saying is that their parents may already smoke. More so traditional tobacco products like cigarettes, cigars, chewing tobacco. So it's always interesting when students come to us, you know, we compare traditional tobacco products to electronic smoking devices. And when we speak about traditional tobacco products, right off the bat, they're like, yeah, that's awful. My mom, my dad, they smoke. But in their mind, they're thinking that electronic smoking devices is healthier. So, in regards to what's the dynamic between the parent and child is that the child seems to have the impression that they're being healthier than what their parents are.
And unfortunately, in some cases, and we heard this from our guest Spencer, that it's not unusual to start with the traditional cigarette product, switch to the vaping product, or even start with the vaping product, but then go back and switch to the cigarette product. So you wind up back where that place is that you thought you'd never been, in general, young people, yuck, I would never do that, versus the e-cigarettes that are certainly more attractive. Now we're going to, for you listeners out there that may want to quit, or if you know someone who wants to quit, let's talk a little bit about resources that we have in our community to quit. We'll have Dr. G also tell us where people may, if they feel that they need a referral to a specialty clinic. So, Natalie and Kirsten, tell us about how someone in Howard County can find out about the teen tobacco program.
So, within the Howard County Health Department, we offer tobacco cessation classes. It's free. You can call the health department and get more information on that. And it's a great resource that, like I said, is free to the community. We also have a website, Teen Health Matters, which is full of great information. And even if you're out of the teen age limit or age zone, it's still full of great information on addiction, sex ed, all kinds of different things that are great topics for people to look into.
We also have a text to quit. When students complete our tobacco awareness class, we provide them with a postcard. It's text for ditch the jewel. Young people who may not feel comfortable calling, phone numbers, it makes it much more easy for them to just have a resource that they can text directly and receive information around cessation resources.
Dr. G, if people, parents, or young listeners out there feel like they need more help than they can get from the smoking cessation program at the health department and feel like they need some medical help, where can they go?
Great question. I think one of the first things I always encourage is talk to your own healthcare professional, whether that's your physician or a nurse practitioner or physician assistant, and tell them that you're using electronic cigarettes and you wish to come off of these products. I will say in my experience, especially when I speak to my colleagues in the pediatric realm, a lot of them really don't have the insight into how to manage nicotine addiction, and even in the case of some adult treatment doctors as well. So if you come across a healthcare professional who feels uncomfortable of managing nicotine addiction from an electronic cigarette and getting someone off of it, you are always welcome to come to our clinic. Our tobacco treatment clinic is located at the Johns Hopkins Bayview Medical Campus in Baltimore City, right up 895, or you can go through the city if you feel adventurous. To reach us, you can do it one of two ways. The easiest way is always emailing us, tobacco@jhmi.edu. Again, tobacco@jhmi.edu. Shoot us an email, let us know that you're interested in coming to the clinic, and we'll write you back with some more insight. The telephone number, if you choose to be a little bit more old-fashioned, is 410-550-0100. When the operator picks up, just ask them to be transferred to the pulmonary clinic, that's the lung clinic, and we'll take over from there.
Well, thank you, Dr. G. Unfortunately, we are out of time for today, but I want to thank our guests, Dr. G., Natalie Hall, Kirsten Miner, Spencer Freeman for spending time with us. If you would like assistance with quitting any type of tobacco product, including traditional cigarettes and e-cigarettes, the health department has a program that can help as described. You can give them a call at 410-313-4255. And if you feel like you need some medical help, you can call Dr. G's clinic. Thank you for listening to The Doctor Is In. We hope you'll join us again next time.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.